morning. My name is Joseph. I feel honored to be here this morning to worship with all of you. I actually heard a lot of good things about you all from Danny. Danny and I became good friends when we were serving together in the pastoral team at First Baptist Church Vancouver. And through Danny, I got to know Jenna as well. And to me, Jenna and Danny, they are the power couple. Just for this morning. They inspire me through their dedication in serving the church and their love to the community. And I really like them both because the world seems to always be better when they're around. That's fair. Hence, I'm always curious about the church community that they love and they invest their lives so much. And that's why when Jenna and Danny reached out with the invitation, I immediately say yes. I would say yes to the Fabianos. That's exactly what I told my executive pastor when I told him I wouldn't be able to worship at my own church this morning. And I just want to say I'm really thankful for the opportunity to be here this morning with all of you. And today, we're going to look at the passage from Psalm 139. If you have the Bible with you or on your mobile phone, let's go through Psalm 139, this passage together. And I know this is a very familiar passage for many people. Some of you, you might be even able to memorize it from top to the bottom and from the bottom back to the top. But we're just going to go through this beautiful psalm together this morning. Let me read. Psalm 139. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was made in a secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. If only you, God, would slay the wicked away from me, you who are bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, Lord, and abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. This is the word of the Lord. I love cycling. We have a small cycling group that cycles on a regular Saturday basis. As one of the weakest cyclists in the group, I typically enjoy the flat routes. I like the one that rides from North Richmond all the way to Steveston, and the route is called the Railway Avenue. There is a dedicated bike lane. It is all flat and all straight, easy. Because I'm usually riding with other younger folks, my only goal during the ride is to match their pace and persevere as long as I can until our very first rewarding coffee / pastry stop. When my body is suffering, when I'm dropping behind my fellow cyclist friends, I would keep telling myself a quote that my wife Angeline saw when we passed by a fitness center in downtown Vancouver. The quote reads, "I want pain, I want pleasure, I want it all." And recently, Angeline and I picked up gravel cycling. We enjoy cycling to Steveston via the West Dyke Trail. So the West Dyke Trail is actually parallel to the Railway Avenue, but it is much closer to the ocean. And by any chance you have done the West Dyke Trail, you know how nice the scenery is and how peaceful the surrounding is. Because Angeline hasn't been cycling for decades, I persuaded her to join me for quite a while. When she finally agreed to do it, she thought she was going to get a comfy cruiser bike with a big basket at the front and freshly picked flowers in it, with a summer hat and a thick and super comfy bike seat to sit on. She's imagining a feel-good and effortless ride, like going on a picnic kind of ride. Instead, I got her a gravel bike with thick tires, a thin bike seat, and a flat bar. And the ride, which usually takes at least 1.5 hours, is a torture for her. Legs hurt, hands hurt, and your body is telling you it is giving up on you. But for me, riding with Angeline on the West Dyke Trail to the same destination, Steveston, the whole ride experience is totally different from the ride on the Railway Avenue. My perspective is totally changed. As I ride on a slower pace, I have the opportunity to look around and enjoy the beautiful creation along the trail while Angeline is crying inside. I want pain, I want pleasure, I want it all. The destination is the same, but going there on a different route, my perspective of the ride has totally changed too. No more vehicles around me to be cautious of. No more traffic lights, no more stop signs, no more distractions. It is just me and the creation. There is a sense of calmness when I ride on the trail with a white field in front of me, wildflowers surrounding me, and the ocean is constantly in my eyesight. I felt closer to the creation and its creator. Like biking on the West Dyke Trail, some show us a different yet beautiful perspective of who God is. When the psalmist praises God with thanksgiving, or when he cries out to God in despair, he reveals his most inner and raw emotions before God. Psalms give us an intimate perspective on the one whom we pray to. Vulnerability, anger, frustration, sadness, anxiousness, happiness, thanksgiving, and along with many other complex human feelings. And Psalm 139 that we read today is a psalm that shows us that kind of intimate perspective. And as you can see, throughout the whole Psalm 139, the dominant pronouns being used are you and I. It is the divine you and the human I. And to the psalmist, the relationship with God is profoundly intimate and personal. And this morning, I want to invite all of you, including myself, to put yourself in the writer's perspective. the psalmist's perspective as we go through this psalm. And the psalm can be divided into four parts, or we can also call them stanzas. And each stanza has six verses. In the first stanza, the word know, with the Hebrew root word yada, appears four times out of the seven occurrences in this psalm. Verse 1 to verse 6, if you can see, you have searched me, Lord, and you know, with the root word of Hebrew, yada, you know me. You know, yada, when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. And in verse 4, before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know, yada, appears again. You know it completely. And verse 6, such knowledge, yada, is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. I'm sure we have those moments when you and your best buddies can read each other with just one eye contact because you know each other so well. I saw that a lot in our youth group, in our young adult group. I've done that with Danny too in some of the pastoral team meetings. You know, something funny happening and then we just, you know, had a high eye contact and then we know what's happening, what's going on. And there's a saying that my mom always tells me, forgive me with the language here, but she really said it that way. She said, Joseph, even if your butt raises a tiny bit, I know what you are thinking. And she is right. I was so shocked when she found out really quickly that I had just started dating Angeline in high school. We got married, so we are good. My mom is happy. And in the psalmist's perspective, the God the psalmist knows is the God who knows him intimately and comprehensively. And here the psalmist uses a poetic technique called merism to illustrate God's comprehensive knowledge of him. The entireness and completeness of knowing are indicated by two opposite elements. If you can see in the passage, when I sit, when I rise, my going out and my lying down, and you hem me in behind and before. So if you read carefully, there's a continuous sense of God's complete knowing throughout the whole first stanza. God, you have searched me, you know me. You know when I sit and rise. You know my thoughts. You know my going out and lying down. You know all my ways. You know my speech. You surround me behind and before. You lay hand upon me. So the psalmist recognizes that there's not one tiny single thing that God doesn't know about him. And the first stanza shows us again and again the psalmist's perspective of a God who knows deeply and intimately. And in the second stanza, the psalmist acknowledges that he can never escape from God's divine presence. The writer asks two rhetorical questions. In verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? And we and the psalmist know exactly the answer of those questions. The answer is nowhere. There's nowhere we could flee from his presence and his spirit. And here we see the same poetic technique, merism, is being used again three times. The psalmist says, if he goes to the heavens or makes his bed in the depths, in the Hebrew word reads Sheol, in reference to the underworld. The psalmist then mentions the wings of dawn and the far side of the sea. So figuratively, the psalmist is saying that even if he goes to the highest point or to the lowest point of any locality, or if he stays in the furthest east or the furthest west, God is there. He will guide him and hold him fast. The psalmist knows that he couldn't escape from God's presence vertically and horizontally. And the psalmist was thinking, if he couldn't run away from God in terms of locality, how about hiding in the dark? Here we see the psalm contains another merism, which involves darkness and light. So the writer thinks if light is associated with divine presence and darkness is associated with chaos and death, then maybe he found a place where God isn't present. But again, the writer realizes that even in darkness, God's presence is there. And his light casts out all darkness. So there's absolute nowhere the psalmist can flee from God. So the whole second stanza shows us that the psalmist's perspective of a God whose presence is inescapable, it is a God who is always present with us. And in the third stanza, the verse starts with the Hebrew word ki. It can mean for or because. The writer is saying that he is known deeply by God and he cannot escape from his presence because God has been with him at the very beginning of his life. In verse 13, it says, "For you created my inmost being, for you. You knit me together in my mother's womb." And the womb image here describes God's careful creation of the psalmist. Same with us too. Not only the writer knows that he's fearfully and wonderfully made, but his formation in the secret places did also not escape from God's watchful presence and participation. What a wonderful news. And it continues saying that all the days ordained for the psalmist were recorded. And the writer knows that God holds all life in his hands. So the psalmist's God is a God who has known him and is present with him even before he was created. What a beautiful first 18 verses. What a beautiful prayer. What a beautiful poem. And the final stanza has a surprising turn. The psalmist now pours his hatred and anger towards the wicked and those who are bloodthirsty. He asks God to kill them, to slay them. Right up until verse 18, the psalm seems to be a beautiful psalm, a peaceful psalm in giving thanks and singing praise to a wonderful God. But these next four verses seems a little bit off from all the verses before. If we are asked to pray using Psalm 139 in a public worship setting like today, I imagine we, including myself, I would avoid these four verses, right? I'm going to pray a beautiful Psalm 139, verses 1 to 18, and then just going to stop right there, right? Because the next four verses would be maybe not suitable, you know, to use in a prayer setting. And I also could imagine modern song composers would have a hard time putting these verses into lyrics without, you know, smoothing them out. But this entire final stanza offers us an important perspective of the writer for the composition of the entire Psalm 139. The psalmist seemed to be in a life-threatening situation where his wicked and bloodthirsty enemies were striking violence and plotting evil against him. Perhaps the threat is so terrible that the only way the psalmist feels vindicated is for God to remove them. The psalmist has no other option against such violent power but to turn to the God who knows him and who is present with him. The writer pleads with God to act because these people are against God himself. While such language may appear harsh, it is actually a display of raw and honest desperation of the writer to God in his dreadful moment. In the face of injustice and life-threatening situations, I would imagine our most honest prayer to God might encompass such harsh language too. And I wouldn't be surprised if my grandma would pray such a prayer when she had to run for her life from the violent enemies when war was happening in her hometown decades ago. Buildings were burned down to the ground and folks experienced things as cruel as you could imagine. But isn't it Jesus asks us to love and pray for our enemies? But I would argue that such poetic expression in this final stanza is not contradictory to the redeeming perspective of Jesus, that we are to love and pray for our enemies, which you can see in Matthew chapter 5, verses 43 to 48. To love and pray for our enemies don't necessarily negate us from bringing our raw and genuine prayers before a God who knows us deeply, who knows our hearts and emotions, who is so intimate to us. And then Psalm 139 closes with the same words as it opens. Search me and know me. In verse 1 to 2, the words are in the indicative mode. The writer knows that, indicates that God has searched him and God knows him. God perceives his thoughts. In the closing stanza, in verse 23, the words are actually in the imperative mode. The writer is asking God to continue to search him, to know his heart, to know his anxious thoughts. So with God's comprehensive knowledge and the inescapable presence in the psalmist's life, he asks God to actively search his heart and his thoughts and remove anything that offends God in his life so that he could remain in that life-giving, intimate relationship with God. And now we have walked through the whole Psalm 139. Perhaps you are thinking, isn't it terrifying to have a God who knows us so deeply, so comprehensively, and has watched us all along from our very, very beginnings? A God whose presence is inescapable? Sometimes we are content with having God near us, but preferably not too near, right? Howard Wallace says it well. We are reluctant to be known so well. There are things in our lives we keep hidden from others, even God. But if God is really the one we believe God to be, then it follows that we are never out of the presence of God, nor are we unknown to God. So perhaps it shouldn't be terrifying at all. Instead, it is an assurance to us that God knows and loves us so incomprehensively and deeply to the extent that he died on the cross for you and for me, for all of us. When he shouted on the cross, "It is finished," he defeated the one final thing that could separate us from his presence, sin. So now there's nothing in the whole universe that can separate his presence from us. Amen? So Psalm 139 shows us the perspective of an intimate and loving God. He is telling us, "I know you. I'm always here with you. I love you to the extent that I would lay down my life for you." So when we read this psalm, it is a very personal prayer between you, God, and me. And in this intimate language of you, I, we stand totally uncovered before him. Our hearts, our minds, our deeds, nothing is hidden. In my darkest night, God, you know, you are there. When I'm struggling, God, you know, you are there. When my body is failing me, God, you know, you are there. And one day, when I breathe my last breath, you will be there too. Because he knows us so deeply, and we could never outrun his presence. And perhaps you and I might meet him at the least expected place. And I want to bring us back to the West Dyke Trail story. It is a quiet evening. The sun is shining through the cloud over the ocean. It makes the horizon look like a golden line. And halfway through, we stop paddling and come down from our bikes. We walk closer to the fence field. There are three restful cows eating grass quietly, and two birds, which seem to be the cow's tiny friends, are resting on the back of their giant friends, which you can't see in the photo, but they are there. And nothing much is going on. Just peaceful and quiet. I thought I was fleeing from the world, from myself, and perhaps even from God. But God's presence is here, as if he's telling me that even when I flee from him, I only flee to him. He has known me from the very beginning. He has watched me all along. He has seen my comings and goings, my faithfulness and my faithlessness. Because he has known me, fully known me, I can trust in him. When the world goes awry and seems to be in open rebellion against his ways, so I come to him, embracing the God who loves me so much. I ask God to search me to see whether there's any offensive way in my life. I acknowledge anew the presence of God. I acknowledge anew my desire to walk in the way everlasting. As the song sings, so I will sing of the goodness of God, because all my life you have been faithful. Because all my life you have been so, so good. And with every breath that I am able, I will sing the goodness of God. So during this Thanksgiving weekend, may the passage of this Psalm 139 remind us of a God who loves us deeply, knows us comprehensively, and is always present with us. And we give thanks for his goodness and faithfulness. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Willoughby Church Sermon Podcast. The Willoughby Church Podcast Network also has podcasts about discipleship, the Heidelberg Catechism, and even a podcast hosted by some of the youth. You can find out more about the Willoughby Church Podcast Network by going to willoughbychurch.com.